So I'm Rick Hansen, and this is October 30th, 2013, the day before we take our masks off, right? Or put them on, but anyway. And I wanted to talk about something I've been practicing more and more with and reflecting more on personally. And I want to explore what is right under our noses, as it were, in our own experiencing. And then link that to how consciousness is produced in our nervous system. And link that also to practice. So I call this the wallpaper. And what I mean by that is that, and you can do this right now in your own experience, you can notice that there's a lot of stuff in the foreground of awareness. You know, moment to moment, there's a sight or a sound or a thought, a feeling, a hope, whatever, in the foreground of awareness, right? We think about stuff, we focus on things, or we get carried away with various streams of thought. Has that ever happened to anyone in this room, you know? You know what that's like. There's content. There's, as it were, figure, distinct from ground. And yet at the same time, we can also be aware that there is a kind of wallpaper in the mind. There is a kind of ongoing background of process or the feeling of being, the feeling of being alive. Without at all being mystical about it or esoteric, it's right there. We hardly ever notice it. It's right under our noses. It's like, how often does a fish notice that it's wet, right? It's in the water of it all. But in our own experiencing, there's this sort of, as I call it, wallpaper or ground or underlying representing process, representing particular contents, sights, sounds, taste, touches, thoughts, feelings, and so forth in the mind. And I think that enlightenment, awakening in a lot of ways, is an irrevocable identification with, and that's not even the right word, it's more like an irrevocable opening out to and abiding as and living from that underlying wallpaper. So it's actually pretty wild to be aware of the background, as it were, or, if you will, the underlying nature or the feeling of experiencing. It's hard to notice this when we're caught up in some particular content. We're wrangling with a partner, we're worrying about something, we're fighting traffic, we're lost in thought, we're dealing with the pain in our knee. It's hard to really notice the background nature of experiencing. Yet at any moment, we can actually notice the background nature of experiencing. When we do that, and when we open out into that background nature of experiencing, a lot of really powerful and ultimately, I think, profound things begin to happen. First of all, you start to recognize that the feeling of being, what's it feel like to be you in a kind of basic way, you know? Like, if I may, so there's a ringing there, right? That's content. Draws attention. I want to thank you, by the way, for this real-life example. I love it, actually. It's great. We're aware of you, her, you know, like feelings for her, sympathy for the embarrassment. It's not happened to anybody. It's happened to me. Trust me, I'm the teacher. When my phone goes off, that's really embarrassing. But anyway, so that's all a flow. Okay, that's content, right? And yet, meanwhile, what was in the background of experiencing? What was it like to be living the last 20 seconds? There's a sense of it. There's an ongoing kind of background sense of the body, isn't there? It's kind of an ongoing, often a background sense of sounds. There's often a certain ongoing background murmuring of thought or perspective. And in that, actually, there's also often, you know, a lot of background kind of almost thoughts, almost sounds, almost desires or emotions. They don't quite coalesce into stability as content or figure themselves, distinct from the underlying ground. That's a lot how it is to be ongoing. It's easier to notice this when we're meditating, and especially as we relax and the contents kind of fall out. An image for me is a familiar one, actually, for many people, that of waves and the water of the ocean itself. So there are these kind of spikes, if you will, or crests of a particular sound or a thought or, you know, a viewpoint or some ruminating. You might find yourself doing it right now. It's perfectly normal. So there are these kind of waves, if you will, that kind of crest, and there are many of them that happen kind of at the same time. So if you imagine the mind as like this kind of vast plain of ocean, of water, with all these kind of crossing over and rising and then falling away, crests of particular contents, waves of particular contents, a particular sound, a particular sensation, particular thought. And yet, all the while, it's just sea. So when we relax in meditation, a lot of the waves start settling down. You know, there aren't so many figures popping out of ground. It gets quieter and quieter, and there's more capacity to abide as and recognize the ongoing feeling of living, the ongoing feeling of being. I want to offer five comments about that and then see what you think about this. Okay. The first comment is to really appreciate that the wallpaper, the ongoing background sense of living, right, which is really dominated in the background by sensation in the body. Because to really appreciate it, the vast majority of inputs coming up into the brain, which then start bubbling away as the underlying substrate of our experience of living, most of those inputs come in from the body, especially from the viscera and the skin, the sensory experience of living. That really tends to be a lot in the background. What's also there in the background is the nature of kind of thought emerging and falling away, the sense of spaces between experiences, how it actually operates, its kind of fizzing qualities. That's in the background. So then, in other words, if you think of this, this is our home. This is what it's like to be you, right? Most intimately. This is what it's like to be me. You know, so for each one of us, registering this background sense, like, wow, that's the context of my living. That's what it's like to be alive. That's what will go away when I'm dead. That's what disappears when I fall asleep. When I wake up, that's what I come into. It's really quite extraordinary to realize this is the enveloping nature of experiencing. So the first comment I have about it is to appreciate in an almost disorienting way how arbitrary it is that it's like this. Why does it feel this way to be in a body, a human body, right? Why does pressure feel like this? Why is sound like that? Why is a thought about a cell phone going off like a thought going about a cell phone going off? Why is it actually like that? Well, it's our experience is the way it is, which we just take for granted. We inhabit it due to an extraordinary bazillions of causes and conditions reaching back in evolutionary time that have gradually conditioned our biology and our nervous system to produce a certain kind of experience of being. Right? It's completely arbitrary. Right? And when you kind of have a sense of, wow, how totally weirdly arbitrary it is, it's hard to identify with it so much. You know, you realize, man, there's this element that's kind of the lizard part and the mouse part and the monkey part, as I've talked about, and all these different things that have shaped existence. And you know, this is the experiencing of being. Like, wow, how could I take this that seriously? You know? That's my first comment about that. My second comment is to be more and more aware, and I think this is very much as the Buddha has taught, to be more and more aware of this process of kind of partitioning or pulling out particular waves, a particular sensation or a particular perspective from this process that actually can feel much more as a whole. In other words, be aware of the parts coming out from, differentiating from, and then commenting on, as it were, the whole, or having, or struggling with each other as the whole. And again, you can see this when you meditate or experience, your mind gets quieter, particular preoccupations fall away, there's just more an ongoing sense of being, ongoing beingness, without any kind of doing, without any kind of part, you know, extracted from the whole. And when that happens, clinging starts falling away, going back to that second noble truth of craving. Because we can only cling to parts. We can't cling to the whole, because we are the whole. We are the whole wallpaper. We are the whole process. So to function, to survive, animals like us engage this process that feels tense. It's a fundamental basis for suffering, actually, in a subtle way. There's this ongoing process of tending to differentiate parts from the whole, right? Figures from ground, bananas from trees, friends from foe, right? We need to do this to some extent, and yet there's a kind of stress in it, because in the nervous system altogether, it's incredibly hard to differentiate these ongoing, dynamic, turbulent coalitions of synapses and neurons forming, stabilizing, and then passing away. So one thing we can do in our own practice is watch this process of positionality developing, or grasping for some object developing, or isolating on something and identifying with it, distinct from the totality. And see what it's like increasingly to soften that, to drop increasingly into being the whole being, being the whole experiencing altogether, in which there's this falling away of craving. Second comment. My third comment is starting to move into how to actually practice this way. Because, and I want to stress the point, I think this is very much the path. I mean, if you want to become a Buddha, be a Buddha. In other words, meditation is kind of an epitome of practice, which we can then engage in the rest of our life as well, where we try to, in a way, be like a Buddha, you know? Well, what's it like to be a Buddha? I mean, what people talk about when they have extraordinary awakenings, almost always, they talk about oneness. They talk about all the tension falling away and opening out into the oneness, and even in that oneness, a sense of profound stillness, because the allness itself never changes. It's still. It doesn't keep moving. Allness doesn't move, right? The ocean, as it were, is never changed. Ocean is always ocean. Waves come and go. They rise and they fall. But the oceanness even of the waves, the underlying nature of thoughts and feelings, actually is, it doesn't change. There is a stillness in it. So that's what people report when they come back from these experiences. And in their everyday life, if they've truly been shifted, there was enough foundation for the awakening to really be irrevocable, to really take root. It wasn't a kind of extraordinary one-off white light moment that, you know, hasn't really made much difference. All right? What are these people like? They experience a great sense of oneness, moment to moment, an ongoingness of oneness. All right? So I'm talking here, helping ourselves, encouraging ourselves, training the mind, and therefore the brain increasingly, to operate in this way while still being functional, you know, and dodging cars and lions charging in the savannah. So how do we do that? That takes me to my third comment. a way into this that you can find again in your own experience is to explore the sense of experiencing as the whole. In other words, letting, what I mean is opening to an increasingly integrated or unified sense of any moment of experience. You could even do it now as you're kind of hanging out. What works is to relax and get a sense of a kind of being, you know, in which experience includes sensations and sounds, taste, touches, and smells, as well as thoughts, kind of as one whole ongoing process, without trying to hold on to anything about it in particular. You know, experience appearing as a whole. In the brain, one thing that seems to support this or is to activate networks on the sides of the brain, especially the right side for most people. It's reversed for roughly half of all lefties. And in that, there's a sense of a kind of gestalt, like experience is a gestalt. It's like one whole unified thing. We can explore this. We can taste it. What happens often is that as soon as you experience it, I'll speak to myself here, as soon as I experience it often, I'll label it, oh, oneness. Then oneness has become a part of the whole. Yeah. I've turned oneness into another reified, essentialized entity, distinct from everything else. And you'll see that happen, right? In a weird way, what makes this work better is you actually, you kind of relax, and then you notice in retrospect that you were there. You were opened out into the wallpaper. You're just kind of hanging as the whole wallpaper. As soon as you notice that, wallpaper becomes an object. It becomes a figure then, differentiated from the larger ground. It's okay. And then the trick is to kind of relax again. As it were, the wave has formed. Oh, I was the wallpaper for the moment. Like I was the walrus, but I'm not going to go there. You know, it's a Beatles riff. But anyway, I'm the walrus. But so I was the wallpaper there for a moment. As soon as we do this, we go, oh, kind of a wave has emerged out of the ocean, as it were. And we go, oh, okay. And then we relax again. And after a little while longer, we go, oh, yeah, hanging as wallpaper. Whoop. Now I've conceptualized it again. I'm differentiated from it. Okay, I relax that. And I try to open out into it again. All right, so that process happens. So that's okay. And a way to help train increasingly is to, you know, just increasingly try to open out into experiencing as a whole, like experience taken as a gestalt. Okay. A fourth comment is a particularly powerful way to do this, and it especially kind of works in meditation, and sometimes I think it helps to keep your eyes closed for this, is to recognize that experience, in other words, the ongoing phenomenology of being conscious, right? Experience has no edges to it. Experience is edgeless, which means it lacks a bound. It's unbounded. It's boundless by definition. And the recognition of the edgeless nature of hearing or seeing or tasting, touching, or smelling, or the edgeless nature of feeling, thinking, desiring, whatnot, that can really take you out into the wallpaper, the edgelessness of it. Okay. And again, emphasizing that, I think this is what profound practice involves. It's not all of what profound practice involves, but it's a lot of what profound practice involves. Opening out into allness, you know, abiding as allness with your eyes open, awake, right? And training the capacity of the mind-brain system to be stable here, increasingly. Abiding as the wallpaper. And then the last thing, see what you think, is to, actually I want to comment first, like, understandably, I'm feeling and seeing drowsiness in the space. Totally okay. So again, drowsiness, right? How can we relate to drowsiness is just one more wave or content in mind, right? And then in a weird way, use drowsiness again to just kind of open out and hang out as a whole. I think some of the clearest moments for people often of experiencing just abiding as the wallpaper are upon first waking. Those first few seconds before there's much sense of self, there's much content, there's just consciousness, there's just awareness there. Okay. So the last comment I have, my fifth comment about this wallpaper idea, in practice really, is to take your experiences as wallpaper, as kind of the whole of experience, the whole of experiencing, to take what that's like increasingly into everyday life and functionality. In other words, to be able to look at someone, to be with them, to know who they are, while simultaneously being light about it, and mostly grounded in an underlying sense of the ongoing wallpaperiness of experiencing. See what I'm saying? We're bringing into everyday life, paying bills, you know, talking with someone, eating something, driving home, you know, this underlying, ongoing experience that we've had repeatedly in our own training, particularly in meditation, although not only in meditation, of just kind of abiding as the whole process of experiencing. Okay. I hope I haven't put you all to sleep. I have found that this practice has actually been quite powerful and continues to be powerful for me. And you know, I invite you into it. And I invite you into it. Okay, what, did that make any sense? I don't know. Well, okay, it's a few hands. Thank God, all right, right there. Yeah.
So how is that distinct from this unabiding awareness of the experience of being?
Well, if I follow you, and it's a natural process, we're in the zone, and then we notice we're in the zone, right? As soon as you notice you're in the zone, you're not in the zone, in a sense, because you've conceptualized the zone, you've labeled it often, one does. That's what I'm talking about. So if I follow you, I think we're saying, you're saying exactly what I'm saying. In other words, that turning oneness into a thing pulls it out of oneness, as it were, right?
Right, but you were early on, you were saying that, yeah. One thing about enlightenment is that enlightenment is actually the awareness of the state of being.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying, if I follow you right. No, okay, now I think I get it. It's a subtle point you're getting at, it's great, right? How to describe that, and I don't pretend to be, I think deep down we're all enlightened because that's the underlying nature of things, and I think that's pretty classic Buddha Dharma, that view, right? Our nature is Buddha nature because that is the nature of things, you know, it's conscious and transient and kind of loving. That said, I think the way, but as they say in Tibet, moments of awakening many times a day. In other words, we have these intimations of what it's actually like, right? And then we're back to our usual. And then we have another intimation of what it's really like. And after a while, those intimations get more intense and there's less and less time in between them. Okay. So in the intimations, you know, definitely that are real for me, kind of put it, there's ongoing being that's awake without any kind of abstracted process that's commenting on the ongoing being that's awake. And there's functionality, there's walking, there's talking, there's intention, there's the executive functions in the mind, there's choosing, valuing this over that, and so forth. And I think a lot of the art, I think it's a little bit like in dance or any skilled act, we're trying to help ourselves get lost in the music, But to get lost in the music, we need to have many moments of training in which we're observing how we're doing and therefore are not lost in the music, but it's an intermediate necessary step. Yeah.
You're just lost. You're unconscious.
That's right. Excellent distinction as well. This is an ongoing recollectedness, right? That's the root of the word for mindfulness of Buddhism, memory, recollectedness. There's a recollectedness. There's a presencing while not separating from it all. Exactly. All right. Great. Linda?
Sometimes to what Stephen Joseph led us in last week, a practice of sort of opening to space,
yeah,
and being space, and then within that things arise and fall away. And as I hear you describe the content, and then there's this sort of background process of experience, it seems like the space is the background to the background. There's actually like three layers, content and all the processing and experiencing that arises out of. And then something even behind that that's not as specific or tangible as this process of experiencing. So that the accessing that spaciousness or that spacious awareness holds then everything else we've been describing.
Yeah, so I really appreciate that. And what I would say is that if you try to just sit, this is Zen, Shikantaza, just sitting. So when we literally are engaged in just sitting, what's happening, right? And what is happening is this ongoingness of awareness and its contents. And for me, I think when I talk about the wallpaper, the ongoing background nature of experiencing, I would think of awareness as woven into it, and part of its qualities, right? First. Second, I think the idea of space as another content in mind, distinct from space itself, right? The idea of space is skillful means. And they actually do that a lot in Tibet. You could do it in this room right now. Like, we tend to be aware of visually the objects in the room. For a moment, really try to be aware of the volume of air in this room that we occupy. It kind of knocks you out, of your ordinary view, right? So I think of, now that said, the idea of space, or the practice of kind of visualizing the volume in the room, would be distinct from, which doesn't disagree with anything Linda said or Stephen said, would be distinct from, some underlying sense that behind it all, right, is some kind of underlying emptiness, right, or space. Right, just trying to track that distinction and tell you that when I come back in 2 weeks, I really am going to go after this. Method to my madness here. You're exactly right. No surprise, Linda. Going out into what's the next step? Because I'll talk about next time what happens when we relax more and more into ordinary allness, the ordinary sense of the wallpaper of experiencing, which is very linked to nature altogether. We start realizing that this the feeling of home. What's it like to be you? What's it like to be alive moment after moment after moment? That experience, that nature of that, is very connected out into nature. But ultimately, I'm going to talk about what I think it might be really ultimately a manifestation of. So that's a tease, sorry about that. Any other comments? Yeah, Bill? And then we'll wrap up in a few minutes, too.
I like to make joke questions. Okay, there's Land O'Lakes butter. Anybody know what Land O'Lakes butter looks like? There's a picture of an Indian maiden in nature holding a a box of Land O'Lakes butter, in which is a picture of an Indian maiden holding a box of Land O'Lakes butter. And
like a hall of mirrors.
What do you call it? Infinite
regress.
Progression.
Yeah.
And the question is, well, what about the allness and the wholeness? And there's something behind that, and there's something behind that.
Right. You can trip out in that way. Yeah. I'm going to try to keep it simple. You know, what happens when you're sitting and your mind starts getting really quiet and you're still awake? Right? You just notice directly in the that experiencing keeps going, right? And it has a certain quality to it. It's like a certain way, you know. Ajahn Sumedho has this meditation pointing out instruction he frequently uses. It's like this, okay?
Yeah, which is a mystery.
Okay, but it feels a certain way. And what I'm pointing out is, or encouraging you to play around with if you want, is to increasingly, if this is an okay word to use, increasingly identify with the wallpaper and not its contents, not the paintings or the drawings on it. Increasingly identify in my metaphor with the ocean rather than any particular wave. And then see what happens when you do that. And one thing you start really noticing is how fizzy, how constructed, how weirdly arbitrary and not worth clinging to, you know, the wallpaper really is. You know, everything is made out of the wallpaper, in effect. Any kind of sound, any kind of thought or feeling is constructed from this underlying process. So I'm encouraging you to look more at the underlying process, the ongoing feeling of living, right? And when you are more and more aware of that kind of wallpaper to living, it's really quite powerful and extraordinary. And it's immediately available to us. I'm really talking about our experience. You know, George Orwell has this line, to see what is under one's nose needs a constant effort. I'm talking about what's under our nose all the time, the background feeling of being. And then to look more closely at what that is as a doorway out into, you know, the profound peacefulness and kind of relaxing out into everything. Yeah.
You just answered me.
Great. Yeah, that's the point.
I wanted to say before your last statement, so what is the virtue of this?
Yeah, the point of it. It's relaxing out, exactly right. And you can feel it. Your mind gets quieter and quieter. You relax more and more out into this process. As long as you're alive, this process will keep going. This ongoing construction of the background sense of being, right? But as you relax more and more into it, you start feeling more connected to everything, right? And also it gets harder and harder to get righteous or uptight. And that's worth a lot, at least if you're me. So maybe one last person, and then I'll,
Did you say that it develops like imperturbability? Or?
Yeah, because you're more and more, and I think this is what happens when people are super far along in their path of practice. They're more and more just abiding as the ongoing process.
That could be useful.
What?
That could be useful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're just kind of, and they're, and so it's hard for them to get agitated about any particular wave. And even waves may arise and go, but they just pass through the mind really quickly because we're not solidifying them or attaching to them. We're increasingly just identified with the underlying being alive altogether. And I think we've all had tastes of that. And I'm going to wrap here on this point. I really encourage you to play around with this if you like. Relaxing out into everything, okay? In your own experience, seeing what it's like to try to be aware of a sense of your whole experience in any moment as a gestalt, not that so included in your awareness. It's like the spotlight of attention fans out instead of pop, 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 pop from one thing after another being foregrounded in your experience. The spotlight of attention fans out, and there's a sense of your whole experience being present in awareness at once, all the sounds, the sights, the tastes, the sensations, the smells, and the thoughts all present at once. That's a good practice, okay? Another one is, especially when your mind is quieter, noticing that experience has no edge, right? Okay. I hope I haven't disturbed you, but I don't know. For me, this is an incredibly good practice. Okay, so we'll see if it's worth anything to you. Let's just sit for a minute. Drop down into the wallpaper as it is. See how this is for you. As soon as you start conceptualizing about it, you're out of it, right? You might need to conceptualize a little bit to kind of guide yourself, to make sense of what's being said. But increasingly, you're trying to let conceptualizations, any kind of partitioning in the streaming of consciousness increasingly fall away. You're trying to help things not need to connect with each other or make sense or be different from each other. And you're increasingly just abiding as the streaming of consciousness. Thanks for putting up with me. See you. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you.